Welcome to the Snowfighters Institute podcast, coming from some of the most interesting people in the professional snow and ice management industry. To learn about their successes, to hear about the challenges they've faced along the way, and to have their perspective on critical issues facing our industry today. Before we get started, I'd like to invite you to follow our social media feeds and to check out our upcoming events at snowfightersinstitute.com. Please welcome your host, Phil Harwood.
All right, welcome, Snowfighters. Well, before I introduce our guest for today, I just want to take a quick minute and talk about the events that we have coming up for 2024 for Snowfighters Institute. I'm really excited because we have our event schedule finalized, and we really put a lot of effort into picking where we're going to be having our events for next year, the dates, the locations, who's involved. We're very thoughtful and very careful about where we go from year to year, because we want you guys to have a wonderful experience. So all those dates, all those locations, they're all up on our website. So if you buzz over to snowfightersinstitute.com, you can check it out. And, you know, if you're like some of my clients and you're looking for a way to spend down some of that taxable income at the end of the year here, Snowfighters Institute is a good place to invest some of that money. So our registration links are all open for all of our events, and you can register as many people as you want. And, you know, instead of paying taxes, how about that? So there you go. Without further ado, I'm really excited to have our special guest with us today, Troy Clogg. Welcome, Troy. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure. How are you today, Phil?
I am wonderful. And I know some of you probably know Troy very well. He's an industry veteran, as I am, and Troy and I go way back. We were friendly competitors back in the day. And, you know, just a quick comment about that. You know, when I say friendly competitors, I'm talking about a competitor in the same market who was a serious competitor, but someone that we had the utmost respect for. And every time I saw you interacting and throughout the years, seeing what you've done with the industry involvement and stuff, I'm very impressed, and I just, you know, thank you so much for everything that you do. You're a wonderful supporter of the industry and a great supporter and sponsor of Snowfighters Institute. So I'm really excited to be having this conversation today, Troy.
You're welcome, Phil. It's certainly my passion, and what we leave behind as we travel this earth is where we spend our time, where we spend our energy. I'm super passionate about the industry, making the industry better, and then ultimately my own company, my own teams, and keeping all the clients happy. And yeah, we had a lot of fun competing once in a while back then.
Yeah. And you know, if you've ever seen someone at a snow industry event wearing a pink blazer or some pink tennis shoes or anything pink, it's probably Troy.
Yeah, we just handed out, I don't know, I just had the sales team and the ops team just picked up some new logoed pink golf shirts today that got delivered.
Love it. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the pink stuff. Really what I want to do in the beginning here is just kind of give you the floor. I'd love to just give you a chance to kind of chat about what all the things that you're involved in. You know, like many successful business owners, you wear lots of hats. You know, you're a contractor, you're a supplier, you run a nonprofit, and I'm sure you're involved in 20 other things that I'm not even aware of. So I just want to give you a chance to kind of bring up to speed about what does the world of Troy Clogg look like today?
Well, that could take up the whole podcast, and we don't want to do that. That would not be fair at all to the listeners, right? And I think the same goes for a lot of us who've been in the industry for 40 years, give or take, right? I was at the MGIA awards banquet this last week, and a lot of us senior members being honored, so to speak, the Weingartz family and
nice
Ivan Katz and others. So no, my life is very much filled with spread between Troy Clog Landscape Associates or Troy Clog Snow Associates, so the contracting side, our supply yard, which is 15 or 20 miles down the road, so to speak, out in the Brighton market, for those who are listening from other markets, where it's, you could picture your average supply yard, only a little bit different because we have a lot of indoor space. So all of our salt is warm and dry inside. That's the home of Hot Pink De-icer, which is the other place that I spend time and energy. Hot Pink De-icer is available all across the United States and Canada. In the snow markets, we delivered 7 or 8 truckloads to Dallas, or not near Dallas, Texas recently. So you never know where that stuff's going to go or where you're going to see it. Your friends at Coleman Wolf are now distributing some Hot Pink De-icer from your past history, Phil. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to see some go through some janitorial supplies that way. And the point of Hot Pink De-icer is that 15 cents of every bag sold feeds our charity. And then the charity feeds families financially devastated during a cancer bout. Mostly focused on breast cancer, but not completely. We are open and generous to other forms of cancer. It's just an awful, awful, terrible thing. We'll probably get back to that. What else do I spend time on? Recently acquired a longstanding tree company, the only acquisition I've ever done. Local market would be Bedard Shade Tree. They've been around almost 100 years. So we added tree trimming and deep rooting and spraying and all the goodies that come along with that. I'm also heavily involved in I could go on and on. I do some real estate stuff. I own some buildings along the way. I'm a full-time grandpa, so I like to spend my time doing that. And then coaching, mentoring. I've got a few meetings this week in that arena. And we're hosting an LMN event this Friday at our facility.
Oh, nice.
And so Kat, who also sponsors Snow Fighters, also sponsors LMN. And anyway, yeah, so we're doing the local facility tour and a little Q&A with Mark Bradley and I.
Yeah, cool.
And that kind of stuff.
So That's great.
That's what I do. Hit the gym, go to church, make sure I get all that stuff in.
Yeah. Busy man. Well, we are gonna touch on a few of these areas a little bit more deeply on this call, but I want to hone in. Actually, what I want to do next, and thank you for that. That was a really nice, succinct overview of part of your world. I'm sure there's more, but no, that's super cool. So, what I'm interested in hearing from you is kind of what inspired you to go down this road, like where. What's your background? Where did you come from? Where did you grow up? How did you end up doing what you're doing?
Well, as the story goes, I grew up in Farmington, what's now Farmington Hills, Michigan, as well as Cascade, Grand Rapids, Cascade outside of Grand Rapids. My dad was a property manager and at that point of his career. And bounced back and forth between those two locations. So those are the two places I lived as a young man. Graduated from high school in Farmington. And why did I get in the business? Mostly survival, to be honest, is how it all started. I needed a job. I needed some money. I needed something, and I was willing to work, knock on people's doors, and ask them what they needed help with. So that's really just how it started. And I also worked at other places. I think a lot of people worked at, back then, gas station, or back when full service gas was a thing, gas stations and restaurants and so forth. I was the kind of family that if I wanted to go to college, I needed to pay for it. If I didn't want to go to college, I needed to move out. raised by some wonderful World War II veterans. My parents were great leadership models and very motivating to, you know, hurry up and get out in the world and figure out what you want to be, kid.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I got moving fast. I was graduated from high school at 17. I did go to a little bit of college, Lawrence Tech and Ferris, but mostly I was cutting grass in between all that. And by 20, 21 years old, kind of made the commitment that that's what I was going to do for a while. Bought my first house, moved out with Greg, who is employee number one here and still here after over 40 years. Employee number one and employee number three are both here. And we moved into a little house together because it was the only way we could both afford to it. I remember back then it was $250 a piece per month. Nice. And that made my $518 a month house payment. And big garage, little house, and I pushed the throttle down on the business. And then I just got to love it. I love to be outside. I love to work hard. Got in the snow business just by default in the very beginning, right? People whose lawns you were cutting needed their driveways cleared.
Sure.
And yeah, so it started very, very simple.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's an easy business to get into, right? Didn't require a huge amount of capital, you know? And I hear this story all the time, right? It's just a lot of people, it's a side hustle when they're kids and then they fall in love with it and they make good money and they're like, you know what? I can grow this sucker.
Yeah. And that's what I did. And then my journey through my 20s was, I mean, I married, two children. And growing the lawn business and the snow business, I got a phone call somewhere in there in my mid 20s from Fairlane Mall, huge mall in our area, about 2.5 million square feet of parking lot. And back then there were no snow pushers. So it was trucks with 7 or 7.5 inch blades and a couple of 5 yard loaders with only buckets and a road grader, believe it or not. You don't see road graders moving snow, certainly not in this market anymore.
We had a few of those working for us.
And I said, you know, and I got asked, can you do this? Can you assemble all this equipment? It was an August phone call. And at the time, I didn't even know what an auger salter was. So I said, yeah, I can do that. And got the contract and built the fleet and assembled the team. And then we were off and running into the, that was back in the 80s. And we were off and running into the snow business. Always growing the residential side. So we kind of had two worlds. I ran one side of it in the commercial world. And Greg ran the, and Dave ran the residential side. Okay. And that's, and then off we went, then more into commercial lawn maintenance, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. So, you're still involved in the commercial part of the business as well, right?
Yeah.
Landscape.
Yeah. Well. Yep. Absolutely. Okay. Most, landscape maintenance and the snow maintenance has grown the most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, just looking at your website, I mean, you have some beautiful photos of some, you know, estate homes that you guys have done work on and won some awards for.
Yep, we're back. Well, we have this other additional, shall we say, construction department that came along late 90s. And it's been a ride. It's been a great release for me. I love to design and build things. So it's been a very creative release for me and allowed us to hire some super talented craftsmen. So whether it's masonry work or carpentry work or brickwork or water features. So I've had a great run with that team as well. So now it's really every line item in that you can think of in the world of either maintenance or construction.
Now, are you really just concentrated in the Michigan market or have you expanded outside of your own area?
No, good question. We have decided to stay focused here in Michigan. We do mostly Southeast Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
We do spread out, even though it's all Southeast Michigan, to be focused, we have 13 satellite locations in the wintertime. so that people can direct report, have their own salt bin, et cetera, and be very focused.
In the summertime, there's no activity at those satellites. Those are just...
The maintenance is all based out of our Wixom location. There might be one small satellite in the summertime, and construction sites would be direct report.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Now, are you subcontracting a lot of work in the snow area, or are you really self-performing most of it?
We prefer not to subcontract. We have grown in subcontracting over the last few years due to the challenge to staff up. Mm-hmm. So now I don't know the exact percentage, but in round math, we're probably half of it is subcontracted. But the majority of the subcontracting is designed that our managers and our teams are still on site. We're subcontracting portions of the work whenever possible, loader work, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Got great, great area managers that keep their eyes on the sites. We are ISO certified in snow, which goes back years now. And so in order to make sure we follow all those processes and systems, it's important to keep a real close eye on the sites. Occasionally, a customer will ask us to take care of their portfolio that involves locations outside of our region, and we'll take care of that for them. But that is not our model.
Sure, right. When it comes to kind of your equipment mix and your technology, you know, a lot of people love talking about that stuff, right? What software do you use? What's the latest gadget, and what? Are there some things that you're excited to talk about when you think about your snow business from a software perspective or technology?
You've hit a hot spot, Phil. You know, I think the business ran better with sheets of paper and people entering data. And no disrespect to any software. I am just adverse to a lot of the technology that has hit our world in all respects and taken a little bit of the human side out of it, but we all have to use it. So no tricks. We use LMN for the time management side and a lot of the scheduling. Mm-hmm. From there, it dumps into some pretty crazy pivot tables and things that we've built over the years. So we kind of have our own backside to the business. Accounting is QuickBooks. So nothing fancy there, but a lot of details behind all that. I don't want to disrespect the team on my team that has built that. In the physical snow moving world, big proponent of using as much iron and as many pushers as we can. Mm-hmm. We have a mix of brands there. On the snow plow side, I've become a huge advocate for the last decade or so of the Western Wideout. Mm-hmm. I was one of the first people, I was in our team, 1992-ish, when the Boss V-Plow came out, right? And that was cool technology.
Had a whole bunch of them.
Yeah, we all did. And there's a lot of cool V-blades out there now. But being able to go back to the straight blade for all the right reasons, and then having it be able to extend, I was a little bit of a critic of all those moving parts when I first saw the product, but I personally plow with them. We all do. It's a great for a plow truck. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Salters. We work a lot with Douglas Dynamics, so all of their product lines, which is in our world would be either Snow-X or Western, but they do Fisher for all the East Coast guys.
Sure.
And Fisher. And
Go ahead.
No, that's it. Like it's the simpler, the better. And then, you know, there's right. Ventracks on the sidewalks, snow raiders on the sidewalks, tractors, four wheel drive tractors, UTVs with V blades. So we do have some V blades on the front and small salters on the back, running around Detroit with your previous company. Mm-hmm. We kind of share the streets of Detroit in some areas.
Sure. I know you do.
And other than that, the shovels have to be pink. The salt has to be pink. And the scoops have to be pink.
I was going to ask if your salt's pink.
Well, the bag product is we're working on some treated salt. So mm-hmm. for those who know the Detroit market, the treated salt has never really made it here and never really stayed here.
Right.
Very popular on the East Coast. So we might be dabbling in that this year, and we'll see. We'll see how that works. I've done it in the past, and I like it. I just don't know if there's a market for it on our supply side.
Right. Now, what's been your experience or investment in the liquid de-icing?
Well, we've done it when we, how do I say this most briefly? We got heavily invested in it when we maintained the GM proving grounds for a season about 20 years ago. And took care of their needs. We had some requirements at the parking decks and parking lots at Metro Airport for a while. We dabbled in it, probably goes back 10 years, 2012 range, with saddle tanks that would inject at the spinner, which I fast forward to this point, I think that is the best and most useful way to use liquids. I'm not a believer in having two sets of equipment. I'm a believer in liquid, but if you have to have people go out and apply liquid on certain days and then also have the same trucks available for bulk salt on other days, I've never been able to justify the additional labor cost.
I agree.
100%. So I like the saddle tank, apply at the spinner for liquids.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay.
Maybe some spraying on some random sidewalks for those touchy areas where people really don't want to see any product.
Yeah, I mean, the training that we've done with Snow Fighters and my own experience is exactly the same. So I think as you were talking, I'm like, my head's nodding like 100%. I agree with you. But, you know, we're in a different market than some other folks are too. And some of this is market specific. I mean, you do what your customers require you to do. So if other markets have gone all in on liquids and that's what you need to do, then God bless you. But I'm with you. I don't want to run two operations.
No, and I've never run
operations enough.
And in all the time studies or all of the product studies comparing liquid to bulk, I mean, everybody knows or admits, right? They both need to be used at specific times for the best results. But I just can't get over the labor formula. I can't get over sending somebody out for hours to do liquid to turn. I just don't have the staffing and the trucks to do things twice. Mm-hmm. So,
well, let's talk about Hot Pink for a minute here. So hotpinkdeicer.com, if you want to jump over the website and check it out. Let me give you a chance to just talk. What's the deal behind Hot Pink? Why should someone use it, and how do they get their hands on it? And what's a Hot Pink hero?
Okay, so Hot Pink De-icer was birthed out of, I get to ask this question a lot, really nothing more than Troy sitting around at a tough time in my life. I won't go through all the personal stuff, but I was in a down time in my life. I was having to rebuild my businesses. And drinking the Jack and Diet, as the story goes. We can't miss all the pieces of the story. And going like, okay, Troy, you're gonna go back into the, you know, you're gonna rebirth this thing. You're coming out of this personal hard time. It's just a very reflective moment between that, my faith, some prayers. I'm like, if I'm going back into the market, there has to be something more than knowing how to move snow from one side of the parking lot to the other, or cutting grass or digging holes. There has to be somehow I have to come up with a way to give back. And then raise my culture in that, and raise my suit. At that point, I knew I would, I mean, my kids are going to get older. I'm going to have grandchildren. I need to leave some kind of legacy beyond the business. So that's kind of where it came. Those who know my logo, it's had the bright color pink has been in my logo forever. So somewhere in that time I came up with, well, the worst thing in the industry is salt. Nobody likes it on any side of the business, but we all have to use it. So why don't I take the worst thing and color it pink and make it philanthropic in some way? So that's kind of the birth of it. Then I went through the study of learning, of studying, all the competitive products, what's in their products, sending things off to Michigan State, having them analyze what's really in here. How do I make this work? Got real scientific with the hot pink and honestly came back to the same simple conclusion as we both just discussed on the best way to use liquids is to apply liquid at the spinner, in our opinion. Mm-hmm. The best way to have an effective de-icer is that the salt comes from preferably the right kind of mines so that it has a little bit more than just sodium in it. It also has magnesium and chloride in it homogeneously. That's not always true, but that's the best raw product, in my opinion, after all my studies. And then the pink or blue or green, whatever anybody applies, is a liquid concoction of something. So in our case, it's mostly calcium chloride. So it heats it up and melts it. Or a calcium magnesium mix. And the size of the granular is important. The 4 to 6 millimeter range is important. So that was the technical side behind it. We started bagging it and boxing it and putting it in different markets. We tried having different versions of it, hot, hotter, hottest, those kind of things. At this point, to keep it simple, we've stayed at one level of product, which is kind of the middle of the road of those three. It's most comparable to any of our competitors in price point that way. Price sensitivity can be an issue.
Sure.
And so that's what hot pink is. And then I could on and on. I learned a lot about bagging companies and partnering and suppliers you can and cannot trust and so forth. But right now, again, we are back. We can bag, distribute, and sell across both countries. We welcome new distributors or just new users. Mm-hmm. And we keep track of everybody's usage and their share in donating to the charity, which is Hot Pink Helpers. Also has its website and social media stuff out there. And for anybody interested, that's really the site to see the people that are helped.
Got it. Okay. No, that's great. And we've been donating and been attending your golf outing when we can and trying to do what we can do as well. But no, I think it's cool. You know, salt's it's a commodity, right? So, but there's some science to it. Like you said, you know, you and I have both seen loads of salt where, you know, there's giant chunks of concrete and rebar in it. And, you know, you get what you pay for, even for a commodity. But at the end of the day, I mean, you got to buy your salt from somewhere. So if you're buying bag product and if your opinion is it's all the same and you can trust what Troy's putting in the bag, you know, buy the pink stuff and help somebody, right?
Yeah. For those who want to give back and, it's some people think it was created as a branding or a marketing tool, so to speak. Not at all. Full philanthropy. I have never taken a penny from the company in the 12 or 13 years it's been around.
That's impressive.
It is not for that at all. It is truly to either put it in the hands of people who can use it and help people. Again, folks like yourself who have donated to that now the additional fundraisers. I mean, that's another amazing story in itself, how fast the golf outing has grown, how much the proceeds have grown, how many more families get helped. We're meeting other folks that don't necessarily want to go through the process of creating a 501c3 and a board of directors and all the responsibility that come with it. But they want to be charitable. Ram Construction gave us $75,000 this year, a portion of their golf outing to help support families.
Well, that's another great way to reduce your tax liability as well.
Local. Yes, it is. Local school systems that have kids that have fundraisers. There's a lot of ways to, and so I'm learning a whole lot more than I ever thought I was going to learn. I'll tell you that much. It's, mm-hmm. There's a lot of people with a lot of great hearts and willingness to give. And Sometimes they just don't know where or how. So for the snow people, it's super easy. Just use pink de-icer on the sidewalks, and you're simultaneously, you know, doing your job and serving and helping other people.
You have any idea how much money you've raised for families over the years?
Yeah, it's some. This year alone. So we're the golf outing raised, including the 75. So the golf outing. Let me back up here. The first golf outing raised 38,000. The second golf outing 94. Wow. And this year north of 120,000 plus the 75,000 from Rand Construction. So
that's fantastic.
200 grand this year. Then the 15 cents per unit that also gets donated, that varies because of the snow seasons, as you could all everybody could imagine. We've had low snow seasons, so that runs in the $20,000 to $40,000 range. So basically we're scratching $250,000 annually to donate. The average grant runs in the $5,000 range. And I mean, I'm aware of three in the last 10 days. So as fast as we can raise money, there are people who need help. It is,
of course,
and it hits close to home once you do this long enough, staff members or their families.
Well, everyone's affected. Everyone knows someone who's been devastated by cancer, whether it's breast cancer or some other form. So this is wonderful.
It's just becoming a true joy and a great way to, like I said, to now raise grandchildren in an environment where that's all they know. So I'm really I'm the guy who looks forward to the next generation. I don't want to miss any one of the fun days in life, but our greatest impact is in the next round of people that are coming. And for me, it's everybody who works here and my grandchildren. So
Troy, if someone wanted to make a donation, what would be the best, what's the website to go to? You know, as well,
straight to Hot Pink Helpers.
Hot Pink Helpers.
Okay. Hot Pink Helpers. And then with your help and others, Phil, because of Snow Fighters, right? So as we get into the following season, we also do, for all the snowplow guys, we do a snowplow raffle. So Douglas Dynamics donates any one of their products. So you get to pick whether it's a Fisher or a Western, whatever, installed on your vehicle anywhere in the country at your local dealership. So about a $10,000 value gets donated, and that raffle will start at the beginning of 24 because we already did one in 23. So that raffle will start at the beginning of 24, and then there'll be a live raffle will be at the golf outing, which is the first Friday in October. And it's a great way to give. You can buy as many tickets as you want. You can increase the odds by buying like $10,000 worth of tickets.
Pay taxes on it.
Right. Why bother? I mean, donate the money. And it all goes to wonderful families. It's really, but Hot Pink Helpers is the place to go right now.
Yeah. No, that's outstanding. And the raffle, I mean, that's just fantastic.
For our industry, yes. Oh, and it's
Where else are you gonna get a free plow? Come on.
Right. I mean, come on. I mean, we all need one. And so why not, you know, or could use one.
So I want to take a minute and talk about your industry involvement, because I've been very impressed. I've seen you everywhere, you know, all the landscape conferences that we've been to over the years, but also SIMA events. You probably never missed a SIMA symposium, you know, ASEA events, being involved in ISO, being involved in Snow Fighters. I mean, what kind of made you want to get involved in all these, you know, state and national associations?
Well, I just wanted to see you, Phil. And I knew if I went there,
and you kept coming back.
I did. I mean, I appreciate that. Back in the day, somebody needed to ask you those questions from the crowd or support your knowledge that you were sharing, right? I mean,
I appreciate that.
So you've walked the same path, so to speak. And
let me ask a more pointed question. What have you So there's two sides to this, right? There's kind of the what do I get from being involved as a business owner or as a person, and what do I give back? So how do you see those two sides?
Well put. Whether it's SIMA, whether it's ASCA, my personal commercial is always for Vistage when it comes to executive leadership stuff, which has got nothing to do with our industry, but mm-hmm. it does have to do a whole lot with continued education through your professional career. And so I guess I would say that as a young person, or when I first got involved, ASCA was different, so we'll leave that aside. But I think I'm SIMA number 27.
Okay.
So I was with John Allen in a hotel room in North Carolina in the 90s when it was his vision and dream to create SIMA. So I believe we're number 27. So what it was like two part. One, as a young man, it's like there's probably some stuff I could learn here, all about me and I. And quickly, whether it was SIMA or Vistage, same thing, education, as life goes on, it's, well, who can I help, and how can my experiences, knowledge, and wisdom maybe help somebody else over a hump, get them there faster, avoid some of the pitfalls that a lot of us go through. ASCA was a little bit different because I was kind of one of the founding fathers board members there with Kevin, and it was a real drive to assemble a bunch of us in the industry and try to fix some of the biggest problems, which led to ISO standards, with ANSI standards, individual education, and so forth. So now the snow industry has industry standards, and then SIMA came out with best practices. So there's a slight conflict there, but mostly they are the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then what about snow fighters? Obviously you've been a supporter of snow fighters as well. And we have an event coming up. But before I talk about that, I feel like I cut you off. You had another.
Well, Snow Fighters. Yeah. I mean, I appreciate what you and Neil are doing and the rest of the team you're building. I might be a little OCD in some ways. Right. So I just left a meeting before we got on this podcast about making sure that people are sharing their own personal time studies. Where does your time go? So I know from my 2023 time study that I personally have just under 150 hours of that year spent in some form of education.
Wow.
Which includes a men's group at church, which includes Vistage meetings, which includes Snow Fighters, which includes an MGIA event or an MNLA event. Mm-hmm. Or seminars on any topic. I am just a firm believer that, you know, whatever we put in us is who we become, and who we hang out with is who we become, or at least it gives us a chance to become them. Mm-hmm. And where else, you know, when you're sitting inside a business, it's hard to get hard to get away from it and work on the business instead of in the business, as the phrase would go. Mm-hmm. And places like ASCA, SIMA, Vistage, and certainly in the last few years, Snow Fighters has really allowed people to, if they turn their phones off as best they can, right? It's really allowed people to engage in creating some really, getting some education and creating some change in their businesses and in their personal lives, in their communities, whatever they want to pick up from these events. And so we're honored to help support Snow Fighters and support the industry, and what you guys are doing. So yeah, you have some cool events, and one of them's coming into our backyard.
Absolutely. Well, you know, this year we held an event at your facility, and we sold it out, and it was a great event. It's a 2-day event. Actually, I was surprised by how many people were not on their phones and completely engaged, because we take breaks and things, but. I mean, we had a wonderful event. You have a great team. And we said, you know what? Where do we want to go again next year in 2024? And we said you were one of my very first phone calls. Like, Troy, we'd love to link up again in 2024. So we're coming back to Michigan in August. The dates that you'll see on the website there are the 14th and 15th. Detroit metro area, so easy to get to, fly into DTW. We're right out in the suburbs, out in the Novi area. Another two-day event full of education and networking. And this is going to be focused on sales. So we call this Forum for Sales. And this is meat and potatoes. This is tactics, techniques, practical steps that you can take to better manage yourself as a salespeople. We've had people that were brand new to the industry. It was their very first day in the job. Show up at a Snowfighter event. And after 2 days, they said, I feel like I've been in the industry for my whole career. I learned so much in 2 days. And we just build people up and equip them. So anyone who's involved in sales or sales management, I would love to have you to check this event out. It's going to be a great event. And Michigan's a beautiful place to come and visit. And if you can extend your trip, like I said, Michigan has it's a beautiful state. It's August. Come see us. There's no snow in August.
Nope. Lot. Well, there better not be. a lot to offer the state of Michigan, especially in August.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what? I haven't done that. We didn't do this last year. We couldn't fit it in, but I think I'm going to revise this. It's not officially part of the agenda, but I'm going to do a personal tour of Detroit. And I'm gonna load everybody up in my vehicle, and we're gonna do a little tour of some of the coolest places you've ever seen in your life in Detroit. So that'll be a bonus. We did that a few years ago, and it was a hit.
I like
Troy.
It.
I have a few more questions. If you have a few more minutes here, I want
to. I do.
All right. Cool. Because you know, I really want to hear some of your thoughts about the industry, kind of big picture trends that are happening. Within the industry, kind of maybe state of the industry. Maybe we can start with that. How do you assess the snow industry today?
Well, in the world of business, and you have all the degrees, Phil, so you know where I'm going with this. I just have all the school of hard knocks. It's define the market, right? So step one, what does the market want? And the market is desiring kind of one-stop shopping in many places. They want, if they have the definition of a property manager in our lifetimes, as we both know, Phil, has changed a lot. They've gone from being on the sites to having so many sites across so many regions that they likely can't go to the sites. Mm-hmm. The buying has turned into large group buying. So we want somebody for not just our 6 or 8 or 10 locations in one city. We want somebody for our 600 locations across the country. So that's not new, but it is more and more it's affecting the market. So for those of us who are peer operators in our own market, as I described us earlier, that stuff's going on. And in some ways I understand, and to be honest, in other ways, I get a little frustrated for the end user and for our families, meaning the patrons that walk in and out of some of these places. If a customer is paying a broker or a sales company that is selling the work, keep the math simple, $100,000 to do a site, and they subcontract it, they're looking for the lowest price subcontractor they can get. And that's not always the best solution, and it sometimes leads to inferior service. As long as everybody's doing the service at the level of SIMA's industry standards, or best practices, I mean, or ASCA industry standards, then I guess I'm okay with it. But we see a lot of deficiencies in levels of service, and frequently it's because of that model. Not always. So the state of the snow and ice management is that's here to stay. It's not going away. You can choose to work for those folks or not. You can make sure you get the appropriate price for your work. Make sure you know the expectations and standards of what you need to lead up to. Be very careful. Like, we could do a whole podcast on legal language, indemnification, subrogation. I think important to educate the industry on what that stuff means. It's not just a price to perform the work. And so frequently, some of the best-hearted, hardworking contractors out there are getting stuck by legal language when something doesn't go well. And it might not even be their negligence on the site that's getting them in trouble. So legal language is huge. Huge. And all of that and slip and fall lawsuits, 1-800 call, whoever, has really just continues to grow across the country. In the state of Michigan, our law, our rules just changed. Our open and obvious language was changed by our governor this year, making it even likely more possible to be sued if you're a snow contractor. So
yeah, we were really protected by the language up until that.
And so it's just tough. It's just way tougher. And for everybody who doesn't know, there's not one of us in the entire snow industry that carries tier one insurance coverage. Not one tier one insurance company will insure any of us. So we're all hanging out in the B and C range insurance companies. East Coast is very rampant and very difficult to get coverage because of their litigation. It's just a... So that's the state of the industry is be careful who ultimately holds the contract, who you're really working for. Be careful of the language in the contract. And then the only way, the best offense or the best defense is a great offense. I mean, a little extra application, a little other visit. And then that leads us into other issues, which is now there's a whole push to use less salt for the environment. So it's a very, very much a double-edged sword. And the industry in that respect has gotten more complicated, sometimes far more challenging than when you and I first got in the industry.
What's been your experience with negotiating contract language or terms? Do you try?
My personal experience, because I profess to be a better negotiator than some, has been okay, but not great. Mm-hmm. I've had team members that just can't get into the conflict, that don't necessarily understand the language. And and so frequently the person you're buying from or the person that is buying from you is not allowed, quote unquote, to change language, and you can't get to talk to their legal team.
Right.
Or it can be very intimidating. I suggest everyone, if you have a good insurance agent or team behind you, that's where you should send the contracts if you don't understand them. That should be your first line of free consultation, not off to the attorney, off to the insurance company to watch for language that that could get you in trouble if something goes wrong. And they're usually very fair or very understanding and applying language that your client may be okay with.
And you're because
it's typically
them.
Fair. And you're already paying them. Right. And they want you not to get sued because they want to keep you as a customer. So they really want to help. So they're really the best. And so the state of the industry, as I see it, that's kind of the trends I see, is that really pay attention to the legal side. Yeah. And then the appropriate labor side, because there's a lot of people. Got to be careful of our making sure that we're paying everybody properly and not taking advantage of 1099 rules or any of those cash on the side, any of those crazy things that too risky for me.
I agree. So the last question I have is, you know, just thinking about someone who's younger in the industry, and, you know, I appreciate you kind of sharing your story about, you know, just how you got into the industry and how the business grew over time and some of the things. Because I, you know, there are some younger people, and I meet them all the time in the industry, who are just very passionate about the industry, but they're novices and they have so much to learn. So do you have any kind of sage wisdom for a younger person
who is newer to the industry? Run! No, I'm just kidding. Well, you already nailed it. You have the exact correct word, Phil. I mean, first of all, you really have to have passion. And it's like a passion and culture. Those words get thrown around a lot in our world today, but it's the behavior around it. Passionate people study the subject. Passionate people want to learn more about the subject. Passionate people are not just in something because of the money or because of a linear, or they like to be outside, whatever it is. Passion means, in my opinion, you need, whatever you're passionate about, you need to know everything about it. You need to learn as fast as you can. You need to start earlier and finish late. That's what winners do. They come to work first and they go home last.
Yep.
I mean, it's every sports analogy out there. You practice harder than you play. Mm-hmm. And in the business world, practice means you go to events like Snowfighters and you learn and you read books. And there's so much knowledge available online in this world today compared to when we were trying to learn these things. And a bunch of old guys who are willing to share stories and, mm-hmm. and give advice. It's, and then just make sure you're in business for the right reason, because businesses need to make money, mm-hmm. and support the people who you end up hiring. Because if you don't, what's the point? Right? Just because you, whoever you are, love doing something, your love, that's the other big transition that you and I know. And I probably didn't listen well when I was a young man, but just because you love working outside and plowing snow or digging holes or cutting grass, it's not long if you grow a business that's no longer your job. And that is not where you're going to spend your time. So you better get good at and or surround yourself with experts in the finance world, in the sales world, in the coaching and training. And the only way to do that is make enough money to afford them, whether you hire them as consultants or whether you pay them ultimately as team members. So, that's what I have to share. And it seems, and God bless any of the young folk. I mean, I know I'm going to sound old when I say this, but it to this day, it is incredible the prices we charge when I just think about the number relative to when you and I started. And the cost of a truck or a snowplow or an office building or a lawnmower, it is, man, oh man. We always had to know our costs, but boy, do you have to know your costs in today's world. It's staggering how much this stuff costs, and we need to make sure we pass that through to our customers and we make money off of it.
Yeah, that'd be smart. You used the word legacy earlier, and maybe that's a good place for us to kind of end this conversation today. And, you know, when you think about, and I use this word a lot in my consulting business, because I'm doing a lot of kind of succession planning type work with people my age and, you know, family generation handoff type things and all that. But, you know, I think it's really, you know, everything you're talking about is, you know, yeah, you need passion, but you need to be smart and make good decisions. And if you build your business the right way over time, you'll have a legacy, that you'll leave behind, you know, for your children or for your employees or, you know, the people that you know and love and that you're supporting. Every business owner I know supports so many families, so many people, you know, they have this huge umbrella. And so, you know, I love what you're doing with Hot Pink De-Icer, Hot Pink Helpers. Love what you've done with your business. I love the fact that you're involved in the industry. And of course, I love the fact that you're sponsoring Snowfighters and we're coming back to your place again. But no, I just, I've, I've enjoyed our conversation. I feel like there's probably another podcast down the road with some other topics. You know, I think having a conversation about some of those legal clauses and provisions would be a fascinating. Maybe we get a couple other folks together and do a panel conversation on that. I think that'd be really interesting. We should even
the legal causes. Yeah. The legal causes and contract structure is always part of your stuff. That's because that can self-insure, but also snow insurance and weather derivatives. Those things all can play into that level conversation.
For sure. Well, Troy, thank you very much. Let's leave it at that for today. Have a great winter. I'm sure I'll talk to you soon, but have a good Christmas. And thank you again for being here. Same it's amazing.
My pleasure, Phil. Maybe we'll cross paths during the holidays. Maybe we won't. But we're never too far apart at any one moment.
And the last thing I want to say is, as you're staring at your tax liability for the end of the year, and you don't want to give all that money to Washington, D.C., because they're just going to give it away to China or whatever, Hot Pink Helpers, write a check.
Amen. And if I have enough interest, I guess I could figure out how to open up the 2024 raffle early. But I think I'm supposed to wait till January 1 to do that. So
I know I am.
All right. Thanks, Phil.
Take care, brother.
We'll take care. See ya. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Snowfighters Institute podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, become a subscriber today so you won't miss any future episodes. Don't forget, please check out our upcoming events at snowfightersinstitute.com.